So I'm going to present Monica Yoon's Nagelfar. And Monica Yoon was born in Berkeley, California, and she's 37 years old right now. And she has degrees from Princeton, Oxford, and Yale, and has a fellowship from Stanford. And she's published one book of poetry and is currently working on her second, but her day job is an entertainment lawyer in New York. So, interesting life. Well, the first thing I want to do before going into the poem is explain what Nagelfar and Ragnarok are, because I didn't know, and it definitely made understanding the poem a lot easier. Nagelfar in Norse mythology is a ship that was made entirely from the fingernails and toenails of the dead, and it was and it was it's commanded by these like giants and monsters, and one day during this time called Ragnarok, it was going to be freed from the land by a flood and sail out, and there was going to be this epic battle between the Norse warrior gods and these giants and monsters. And during the battle, all of the, like, most of the gods and the monsters were going to, die in this, apocalyptic death, and the universe was going to be destroyed, but then reborn again from the sea. And then the ship itself, this, ship made of nails, kind of created the custom that the dead shouldn't be born with uncut fingernails or toenails, so that no more material can be added to the boat. So I'm just going to read the poem really quickly, just so you can read it with that in mind. She said they are building the ship, the color of steam, the color of salt. The end of the world. She stopped speaking. She was alone. She spent hours cutting her fingernails. They won't take them when I die, she said, for the ridged sides of their ship, cutting off the white crescents. They looked like tiny boats. They collected in her pockets, in the seams of her dress. I'm trying, she said, holding out her nailless hands, to prevent the end of the world. Ragnarok, she said, if startled. Her eyes strayed to the notched petals of the dogwoods, the flecks of mica in the path. All right, so in the first stanza, the first thing I wanted to talk about was the attention that she pays to form in this poem, especially the distinct way she creates more and more spaces within each line. In the first stanza, she has two lines that have one or two extra spaces inserted in the middle of them, and those spaces grow larger and larger throughout the poem, until by the second to last stanza, there's room for entire words in those spaces. And I think these growing spaces reinforce the main action in the story, because the lines look like they are getting torn apart, just as the woman in the story is tearing apart her own nails. And the fraying could also represent the second layer of the poem, which is the story of the destruction of the world. And just as the world is something that we think is seemingly concrete, lines are supposed to be this almost a backbone of a poem, and they're getting completely frayed. These lines could mean or symbolize a lot of other things, Nagelfar, or how meaningless language is, and the destruction of the world. There are lots of things. But I think the main point as writers is that by changing up the typical structure of a poem, you can imply a lot of meanings without actually saying them, which is, I think, something that we should remember as we write our own poems, because not everything has to be said. Poetry, in this way, is a lot like art, because it allows you to show meanings and not just tell them. And it's also interesting to note that by splicing the lines in half, Yoon sort of creates two other poems inside this main poem. I had a lot of fun trying to read the poem, on the left side going straight down, and then on the right side, because while the story is inherently the same, it's just amazing how you can read it every single way and it still makes sense. And I guess that sort of leads me to my second main point, which is about word choice. And Right, it's evident that, she must have chosen her words incredibly carefully, because by making her lines so short and fragmenting, like, within the lines, and also not using any punctuation whatsoever, the reader basically has to give his or her full attention to the each word, so there are no other distractions. And none of her own words are longer than two syllables, with the noted exceptions of Naglfar and Ragnarok, and which both very much stand out against the ordinary words of everyday speech, just like the end of the world, cutting her fingernails. Oh, there's a three-syllable one. But that sort of reminded me of the poem by Heaney we read, where he had his Anglo-Saxon lexicon interspersed with one or two words of different origins, like diminuendo. It's like the poet's creating this steady plane with these great landmarks of words that you can really ground yourself in. And I mean, we don't forget the other shorter words because they're so isolated by the spaces, by a lack of grammar, or not grammar, by punctuation. But our ears instantly perk when we hear those longer words. And I also wanted to note that even though she is using very ordinary words, she isn't forgetting to pay attention to how they sound next to one another. And I think she creates undertones of rhythm using similar vowel sounds, such as in the last stanza with notched and dogwood, and then in the seventh stanza, is it with prevent the end. And she also repeats words and phrases to make that rhythm a bit stronger, such as in the first stanza with the color of steam, the color of salt, and in the middle where she says, the white crescents, they looked like tiny boats they collected. So even though the rhythm is slight, it conjures up an image of your mind, going with Naglfar, like this ship on top of a water, and the way it flows easily, but there is a steady beat to it as well that you can feel. So I guess the main messages that I think we can learn from Yoon in this short poem is, like, first to play with form as a way to communicate your message, and second, to be conscious of the voice you're creating by choosing a certain lexicon of words, knowing which lexicon that is, and then allowing yourself to explore a bit with more unique words to make the reader wonder and to create landmarks from which the rest of the poem is rooted.
What do you make of the fact that this is written in couplets and then the last one is quite distinct?
That was something that I was wondering about because, I guess my first thought was like to go back to like the meaning of it, of like the deeper literate meanings of it. I mean, it's this framed poem within this story that she's telling, and then by the end she goes back to things she's seen in a world that is still whole. Like those are where she goes back to nature images, to dogwoods, to mica on the ground. So even though she's talking about something that's fraying apart, there is still this earth that exists, like that's flat and complete, like those two lines. But I wasn't completely sure.
So in terms of being writers, do you guys see that this is, remember we talk about tensions, if you do something again and again and again, again and again and again, again and again and again without any disruption of it, it can become flat no matter how disruptive it was in its own self to begin with. And she shifts that at the end. So that becomes a very interesting kind of way to alleviate a potential monotony of a particular form's choice. So thinking about that for yourself and why that makes sense that at the end she has a turn from that. And couplets. What's the effect of couplets? This, you know, we're thinking about reading. Have you tried? Has anyone tried to write in couplets? When we get to form, you know, when we really get into form, you know, this week we start loose, just playing around and seeing what we see. But next week when we start